Aviation manager. I just wanted to bring to your attention some of the changes in both City Code Chapter 15 and Chapter 3. Chapter 15 is the emergency code, and in such it outlines some of the actions needed to be taken in an emergency, and this is the guidance for the city in all disasters. So mainly it is we've changed definitions. And Chapter 15.404, the declaration of disaster, C and E have been changed. It says that the mayor must declare the city in a state of emergency prior to requesting resources from the governing body of Multnomah County. That is just basic protocol, step to step. The county then goes to the state. Since the county doesn't have the same type of resources that we do, this is a very quick process. And also an E, the mayor will communicate the change of the disaster response phase to the recovery phase with all appropriate officials. And this also is allowing people to understand the public, as well as all of our city bureau officials, that we are in a different part of the disaster. We're no longer looking at life safety as an issue, but reconstitution of our resources, our government. And I understood that you had a question about that, Mayor. Does that, it's basically just another piece of the protocol. Okay. Moving on to 1508, the only there are not any changes in that, but pay attention to this executive responsibility chapter because it outlines the mayoral powers that will be instituted once we declare a disaster. 1512 is the duties of the Office of Emergency Management, and it is just, again, more defined definition. We are a coordinating body, not a directing body. For Chapter 3.124, this again is outlining and clarifying definitions of emergency, outlining the Disaster Policy Council as the main one. We wanted to make sure that the mayor or the president of the council, whomever is in charge of the disaster, has an advisory body that is the key people of our of the government to advise the mayor, the president of the council, of what the issues are and the policies that need to be directed during a disaster. This chapter also outlines the purpose and staff succession. Those are the main changes in that. And 3.125 outlines the membership of the Disaster Policy Council. It's the mayor, the president of the council, the auditor, the chief administrative officer, the attorney, directors of Portland Office of Emergency Management, chief of police and fire, Office of Transportation, and water. These are the main response bureaus, the main infrastructure bureaus, and the ones that are going to have a lot of resources to bear in a disaster. Everyone else we will probably confide in, but these will be the main ones that will be giving you direction and advisement. The Chapter 3.126, the only change in this really is the establishment of an emergency management steering committee. These are the worker bees in each bureau that that are directly relative to the Disaster Policy Council. And we confide in them on a regular basis to make sure that that we're all in sync, that we're all moving along in the same lines and are gathering the expertise from each one of the infrastructure bureaus, so we're coordinating correctly. So it's a lot of changes, but just strengthening the ability for the council to perform and the bureaus to perform in a disaster. And we're going to be testing this in top off.
Questions from commissioners?
Thank you.
Thank you, Patty. Because it is going to be tested and top off, it is an emergency vote, so.
There is an amendment to this.
Oh, okay.
Everybody get that? It was distributed yesterday in the Tuesday memo regarding line 4 and the findings.
Do we have copies of that, extra copies?
I've got it here. It's just apparently.
So just the chief administrative,
chief administrative officer.
Exactly.
And deletes finance and administration.
That amendment.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Potter? I'm sorry. Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please call the vote on the emergency.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1238.
Vacate portions of Northwest Quimby Street and Northwest Aspen Avenue subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Second reading, call a vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read 1239.
Allow Portland Office of Transportation to administer the carpool program, including policy and pricing revisions.
Second reading, call a vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1240.
Adopt the State of Oregon 2007 editions of the Oregon Structural Specialty Code and the Oregon Mechanical Specialty Code, including optional sprinkler code, accommodate state administrative rule revisions for plumbing and electrical regulations.
Mr. Leonard?
Good morning. Thank you. We have staff here to explain this.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, Commissioner Leonard, members of the council. My name is Lori Graham. I work with the Bureau of Development Services. Before you is an ordinance that in essence does two things. It amends titles 24, 25, 26, and 27 to bring them into compliance with the required state adopted structural codes and rules. In addition, at the request of the fire service, it adopts an allowance under the state codes that will require limited fire sprinkler provisions or retrofitting for those apartment buildings, larger apartment buildings, that are substantially altered or substantively damaged in an event. It should be noted that the language, this fire sprinkler language, mimics that has already been adopted by this council in 2005 for smaller apartment buildings that are regulated under the Oregon Residential Specialty Code. Portland Fire and Rescue conducted an outreach and information process to those that will be most affected by these changes, including low-income housing developers. Jim Schwagler of Portland Fire and Rescue is here in the audience today, and either one of us will be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Did you want to add anything, Jim? Nothing to, okay.
Questions from the commissioners? Thank you. Did anybody sign up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is anybody here who wished to testify on this matter? It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. What is the date of that reading?
Will be October 17th.
Okay. Please read item 1241.
Authorize intergovernmental agreement with the USDA Forest Service, Mount Hood National Forest, for protection and stewardship of the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit.
Second reading, call the vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Item 1242.
Approve funding recommendations for the early childhood and after school programs made by Children's Investment Fund Allocation Committee.
Mr. Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. In 2002, Portland voters created the Children's Investment Fund, which is investing about $10 million a year for programs reaching the city's neediest children. The Children's Investment Fund investments are presently funding 66 proven programs throughout the city, helping 10,000 children and 1,000 families each year in areas of early childhood development, after-school mentoring, and child abuse prevention and intervention. The Children's Investment Fund is seeking council approval for three allocations today that were approved by the fund's allocation committee. As required by an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County, the Children's Investment Fund has already sought and obtained approval for these allocations from the County Board of Commissioners. To provide more detail on these allocations is the Director of the Children's Investment Fund, Lisa Pellegrino.
Thank you, Commissioner Salzman. Good morning, Councilman. I'll describe briefly the allocations, and I'm happy to take any questions people have. The first allocation was made with, we had additional resources unexpected through additional tax collections, and the allocation committee voted to spend $2.7 million over 3 years to do a project to improve access to quality child care and improve the quality of child care in the city. This will help mostly low-income kids who don't have access to quality care. The second allocation is a leverage fund allocation, leveraged by grants from the Gates Foundation and Meyer Memorial and the county to bridges to housing, and it will provide child care subsidies to low-income families who are homeless families who are participating in the Bridges to Housing project. The third allocation is, or it's really third and fourth, one is a renewal of the SUN program at three area middle schools. We are renewing that program. We're just going to do it directly through the nonprofits as opposed to going through Portland Public. It's the only change there. And the last allocation is a separate allocation to continue a SUN program at Alder Elementary School, which is the poorest school in the city and county, which was going to have its program end this year because of grant funding that was running out. So we stepped up to try to continue that funding for a year while there's currently a SUN Council meeting that is going to recommend some changes to the whole system. So we are kind of providing a stopgap for 1 year while the Council sorts out what's going to happen to the SUN system overall. So those are the allocations in a general sense. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to give more details.
Questions from commissioners? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Has anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? Emergency, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Please read item 1243.
Adopt the recommendations of the report of the work group on containers in the right-of-way and direct city bureaus to implement the recommendations.
Commissioner Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. 2 years ago, this council voted to convene a work group of private and public representatives to develop solutions to a livability and nuisance issue raised by the Ombudsman's Office relating to containers in the right-of-way. The bulk of Portland businesses comply with current city code, which prohibits private property in the public right-of-way. But approximately 300 businesses still store garbage on public property. Garbage dumpsters and containers in the right-of-way are more than sore sites on a city sidewalk. They impede pedestrians, especially those with physical disabilities. They pose sanitation and fire issues. They have been targets for graffiti, and they are inconsistent with city requirements for container storage on private property. This report proposes solutions to the current problem and also how to prevent future containers from being stored in the right-of-way. We have had communications in from the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition and several private citizens and small business owners in support. And we just received a letter from the Portland Business Alliance today that also is in support. So here to present is Judy Crockett from the Office of Sustainable Development, who co-chaired the committee with the Office of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. Good morning. I'm Judy Crockett, as the commissioner said. And for the last 2 years, I have been co-chairing the what's called the CRO Committee, Containers in the Right-of-Way Committee. My co-chair, Alex Bejarano, from the Department of Transportation, is not here this morning because his wife just had a baby. And Don Gardner is sitting in his place. And Lori Graham from the Bureau of Development Services has also been a very active partner on this in this endeavor. As you know, 2 years ago, the council set up this public-private work group. It was made up of a number of business associations. There's 16 members in all. and a variety of city agencies who had some jurisdiction over the problem of either garbage, nuisance containers, or buildings. And we had, as well, two citizen members. As you know, containers do cause problems. They are a serious livability issue. They block the street. They attract graffiti. Excuse me, it's gotten very dark in here. And they also have an adverse effect on businesses that are neighbors. It's not just the passersby that are affected by this. And they're in violation and have been in violation for at least the last 15 years of city code, which says that you are not able to store personal property on the right-of-way. This has not been rigorously enforced for a variety of reasons, and we have seen the problem grow. The committee met over the last 2 years for at least 12 meetings. We had a variety of drafts and redrafts of the reports and the recommendations. We've decided to take a three-tier approach. The committee was unanimous in supporting the first approach, which is to make sure that the problem does not increase. That is, that no new buildings or significant remodels happen without space being provided on their own property to take care of the garbage and recycling. That was a fairly easy solution, and we will be wanting to draft code language to clarify exactly what we mean by adequate space. But the entire committee supported that. The more difficult problem, and one where there are a variety of opinions on the committee, is what you do with the containers that are existing currently. I may have mentioned that we did a survey both by car and on foot of the most of the oldest and the most densely populated areas of the city, Old Town Chinatown, the Pearl District, Northwest 21st and 23rd Street, downtown, and the Central East Side Industrial District. And we were able to identify 124 businesses that were storing containers in the right-of-way. Since we know that there are containers in other areas of the city, we extrapolated to say that there are probably 300 containers out there. Now, this is a very small percentage of Portland businesses. There are about 25,000 businesses in Portland, so this is just about 1% of the businesses are using the sidewalk as basically as rent-free storage space. Many of the businesses don't realize that this is against the law, and one of the approaches that we have agreement on is that we will publicize for 6 months the fact that it is, in fact, against the law to store on the right-of-way and request that businesses take those 6 months as time to figure out how they're going to deal with their garbage on their own property. We also, after that 6 months is over, will then begin enforcing and bringing businesses into compliance on a complaint-driven basis. We'll work with the businesses, particularly if they are needing to do remodels inside. We'll certainly give them more than the normal 30 days that the OSD uses to enforce people who aren't recycling. And we have a provision in the recommendation that says that in cases of extreme economic hardship, we will work with the business to possibly allow them to retain their containers on the street. One of the issues that the committee considered and rejected, and it's mentioned in the report, is that there was a possibility of permitting businesses to store the containers on the right-of-way. And the reason why we rejected that was that it was inconsistent with our existing city policies that apply to businesses who choose to put the containers either in their buildings or outside on their property. And those businesses are required to screen or fence. They're required to plumb to the sanitary sewer rather than the storm drain. They're required to cover it, and they have a variety of other requirements, which, as I mentioned, 99% of the businesses are currently doing. If we allow people to store it on the sidewalk, we're certainly not going to allow them to screen it, and we would still retain all the nuisance and livability concerns that we currently have. Cost to the city, we expect this will take some money for both dealing with contractors and people who are building new buildings. We estimate that would be a half of a full-time employee, and that would be located at the Bureau of Development Services. Publicizing the existing law, we anticipate about $1,000 for that, and we want to work with the business associations to make sure that it also gets out in their newsletters and the neighborhood business associations as well. And we want to work, we estimate about half of a full-time employee to do the compliance procedures with the existing containers. In the first full year, we're anticipating that to be a full-time job, but then to drop down to half-time because, after all, 300 containers and with a certain amount of voluntary compliance, we don't think that that's going to take a full-time job from now on. That money will be provided by increasing the commercial tonnage fee on trash, and that's, we estimate it'll be about 20 to 30 cents a ton. When you break that down into real-world numbers, that means that for a business that's currently having 2 yards, and that's the sort of garden variety size container that's in the right-of-way, 2 yards of garbage collected weekly, that would be about 16 cents on their bill for the tonnage fee. Potential cost to businesses, this has been something that we have looked into in fairly great detail. I believe from my survey that a number of businesses will be able to bring their containers inside without any additional cost. The photo that you see in the PowerPoint right now is one I took last week of a business in the Pearl District that's storing both pallets and what looks like a 2-yard container outside of their very large bay doors, which have a large open space, and it from my eyeballing of it, I would assume that they could bring those containers inside with very little reorganization on their part. So I think a lot of businesses will be able to bring it inside. Some businesses which are currently having their garbage collected once a week out on the sidewalk would be able to bring a smaller container inside and have it collected more frequently. That would increase the collection cost, and that is a cost of doing business that many other small businesses like Cassidy's Restaurant, for example, which has 6-day-a-week collection, are already bearing. For businesses that have to build a new space inside, we have estimated in discussions with BOMA, which was one of our committee members, that that would cost for a new space about $18,000. Now, I've had people say that they thought that was high. Obviously, I'm not in the construction business. I don't know. As I said, most businesses will be able to deal with this, and in one instance where I have enforced on this year, the business didn't bring it inside, but they made an arrangement with a neighboring business to share their garbage collection service, so they were able to take their containers off the street and pay a certain amount of money to have that collected. In terms of what we're asking from you in next steps, we plan to, if you accept the report and the recommendations, immediately begin work with BDS to draft language that would apply to new buildings and significant remodels so that we can plug that loophole. Draft code and rules for the existing containers. Then in December, begin the publicity outreach to businesses that are currently storing on the right-of-way. And in May and in June, begin the compliance work, and we hope that by that time we'll have the language drafted for the new construction. I appreciate your attention to this matter. It has been controversial, and I want to say that I very much appreciate the work of all the members of the committee. I know some of them are here today, probably in opposition, others in support. But it took a lot of time and a lot of effort, and they did what we would hope all good citizens would do, which is participate to the best of their ability in helping us come up with good policy. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes, I do. So see if we're tracking in our understanding. First off, I think great work. A very difficult issue. Had an opportunity to read In some cases, the cost for the containers, making changes to the way that they deal with their containers, is going to be borne by the business lessee, and in some cases by the building owner. Talk to me more about the discussion within the group about those circumstances where we have small businesses that don't own their building but potentially would be required to foot the bill for, would they be required to foot the bill, or is it your understanding that the building owner would be required to foot the bill, or does it depend on the circumstances? What was the discussion within the committee about the smaller businesses' ability to comply with this new regulations?
Sure. We had a fair amount of discussion about that, and the answer, I think, would be that a lot of that would depend on the conditions in their lease. If the lease says that the building owner is providing the garbage space, then it would fall on the building owner. If the lease said, and some of them do, that the person who occupies the space makes the arrangements for their garbage collection, then they would be paying for that cost. Again, I do want to point out that the vast majority of small businesses are currently complying with our existing law.
And is part of the $18,000 estimate cost, is that like sprinkler requirements once you move garbage in?
Yes, part of that is sprinkler requirements, and part of that is just the cost for new construction of a 10 by 10 room. And that was the ballpark estimate that we got from BOMA.
And what sort of assistance have you lined up, or have we yet lined up assistance specifically for businesses that have to comply with this?
We met with, frankly, there's not a heck of a lot of money out there for business, as you probably are aware. And we did talk with PDA, and they said that some of the money for storefront improvement probably could be used in the districts where that applies. Now, that doesn't apply to every district in the city, but...
PDC,
sorry.
That's all right.
And so there is some money available there. Frankly, there is not a lot of money out there, particularly to allow people to stop breaking the law. So, and when we did meet with PDC, they referred to the amount of money that we were asking for as a microloan, which I guess in the overall ballpark of what it costs to run a business, it probably is. But
I just wonder what the businesses that don't own their space that are going to have to comply to this, I'm not sure if can they get a bank loan or outside the zones that we've established for storefront improvement. I'd like a little more exploration on what we can do to help those businesses.
Was that a question?
In our budget last year, we did adopt a citywide storefront improvement package. It's not, and I'm not saying storefronts necessarily appropriate for this, but it is truly now available throughout the city, not just urban renewal.
Further questions? Thanks, folks. How many folks have signed up to testify?
We have 8 people signed up.
Okay. Please call the first 3.
That's Michael Levine, Judy Crane, and Ken Turner.
Thanks for being here today, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes. Michael, why don't we begin with you?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. I am here. My name is Michael Levine, and I'm here today representing Portland Citizen Disability Advisory Committee. We are in support of removing containers from the sidewalk and opening up the right-of-way to pedestrians. We go further, if I may, as long as I've got your attention here for a second. We also are concerned about cafe furniture, newspaper boxes. Basically, we would like to see the sidewalks in Portland opened up for access for pedestrians and being people with disabilities and representing people with disabilities. We have other difficulties. We've shared some of this with Rolls and Strolls with three of the members here today. I think you understand some of the obstacles that we do face, and eliminating containers and the other items I've talked about and freeing up the sidewalks would just be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and City Commissioner. My name is Ken Turner, 4000 Southeast 82nd, Portland. And I'm speaking on behalf of the Small Business Advisory Committee this morning. And first of all, I would like to thank Judy Crockett for chairing that committee over 2 years. Sometimes it seemed like a lot longer to us, and probably to her it seemed like more than that. And again, I'd like to thank her for that. The Small Business Advisory Committee met this morning, and through some discussion led to the short letter that you folks have this morning, suggested by the Small Business Advisory Committee Sustainability Committee, that that we suggest to this committee, to the council, that we refer the Crowe report back to the commissioner in charge for further consideration, as there may be some conflict with the recycling issue that will be decided in the very near future, as containers in the right-of-way will necessitate, or the recycle will necessitate, in all likelihood, additional containers. We don't agree with most of the opening statement by Commissioner Salzman. I don't think any of us likes to have or see containers in the right-of-way, but sometimes, you know, we have to work around those issues. And thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Judy Crane, and I operate Holman's Bar and Grill on Southeast 28th and Burnside. I've served on the Crowe Committee since it began back in 2005, and I, too, would like to thank Judy Crockett for her time. She has spent 2 years herding cats, and it's been difficult, and she's done it very well. I'm here representing the Small Business Advisory Council, and I'm also presenting the views of the Oregon Restaurant Association, since their representative was unable to attend this morning. As you've been told, we spent many hours considering the problem of garbage and recycling containers stored in the right-of-way. We fully agree with the first recommendation of the report, which requires that new construction and major alterations provide for proper on-site storage of containers. We also agree with the second point, which calls for public education. We do not, however, agree with the third point, which deals with solutions for existing non-compliant containers. We agree that publicizing the existing law is a great first step, since we believe most businesses out of compliance are probably unaware of the rules. We think this will eliminate the majority of the problem. Since the estimated number of businesses in non-compliance was extrapolated from a very unscientific count, we think that a more accurate estimate of the problem could be determined during the education phase of the process. In fact, the report acknowledges problems with the estimate and suggests a first-year gathering of data with a report back to the work group with further recommendations. That brings us to one of our major problems. If we intend to spend the first year gathering data on the issue, why are we planning to institute the enforcement process with fines after only 6 months? The report states that the estimated cost of compliance is roughly $18,000, which is not an insignificant expense for a small business. Actually, this number could be much higher, particularly if the business is located in a historic district with very strict limitations on alterations. Also, the consequence of indirect costs and impacts on business and the community are too easily dismissed in light of the pride that Portland takes in viewing itself as a green city. More frequent trips by haulers adds to congestion, road wear, neighborhood noise, and pollution. Fortunately, this report concedes that these expenses may be onerous and suggests funding by the PDC or other programs. We think these funding sources should be better identified before we begin the enforcement procedures. Finally, the report has no defined solution for businesses who simply have no alternatives for compliance. The Restaurant Association, the SBAC, and the APNBA representatives all advocated for some sort of a permit system as a last resort for these people. In fact, when the committee did research of other cities similar size and population, we found that some places do have a permit system. In Philadelphia, for example, they decided that they were willing to trade some aesthetic considerations for job retention, and we think Portland should demonstrate that same sensitivity. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
The next three are Dan Andrew, Jack McCreary, and David White. Dan Andrew, Jack McCreary, and David White.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Dan Anderson, 2144 Northwest Flanders. Commissioner Salzman, Mayor Potter, commissioners, I served on the Crow Committee as one of two citizen representatives. The other citizen representative had to drop off the commission less than halfway through the work period. The remaining 7 public members of the work group represented refuse haulers, building owners, and users of commercial space. And thus, I think the Crow work group is hardly a hotbed of neighborhood or pedestrian activism. And the work group's recommendations for a gradual, measured approach to eliminating the practice of storing dumpsters on the sidewalk very much represents a go-slow compromise. I encourage you to accept the Crow report, to endorse its recommendations, and to direct staff to move forward to implement those recommendations. In doing so, you won't be alone. Many other jurisdictions, including, for example, Seattle and Boston, prohibit the storage of dumpsters on the sidewalk. They also vigorously enforce these codes in a manner well beyond anything you're being asked to do, well beyond. The current situation here in Portland should simply not be allowed to continue. Among other things, the practice is simply not legal. Yet in the absence of guidance from the council to the contrary, the several bureaus arguably having jurisdiction shirk from enforcement. This is a dysfunctional embarrassment to the city that works. Failure to enforce in the face of persistent citizen requests to do so promotes a scofflaw culture in which citizens learn by municipal example that ordinances need not be obeyed. This is hardly the kind of thing the city needs to teach while it's concurrently attempting to discourage other citizens from sitting or lying on these same sidewalks. The Fire Bureau has identified dumpsters as, in their words, a leading source of preventable fires. Your leadership is needed to extinguish this practice. The present situation is also a potential source of legal liability for the city under the Clean Water Act and under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Finally, as you look at the arguments against council engagement, they basically come down to arguments for selective toleration of pollution, circulation obstruction, and lawbreaking, all dressed up as a business preservation strategy. We have long since decided not to sacrifice our rivers and our airshed in the name of business retention. We now need to make the same choice for our neighborhoods and our pedestrian rights of way. Today's the time to act by endorsing the work of the Crow work group in its gradualist, go-slow approach in initiating the staff work required to ensure its timely implementation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Potter, commissioners, Jack McCreary, resident of Old Town. I want to save 2,000 words, so I just brought 2 pictures instead. This first picture, I don't know, can you see it, commissioners, mayor? This is me in the Pearl trying to negotiate a sidewalk in my very narrow scooter. When I'm on my crutches, it takes, I block this entirely to get through, okay? Second picture, also taken in the Pearl. This is a dumpster. I'm sorry that it's not too clear, but there's trash coming out the top. There are pallets behind. These are fire hazards. These are health hazards. And so this is what you see when you try to negotiate one of these dumpsters. Now, both these pictures were taken last Thursday, First Thursday. This is what people in the Pearl going to First Thursday
had to negotiate. They had to wait in line, not just to go to the galleries, not just go to the restaurants. They had to go single file or double file to get by obstacles like these. And when they got, when they were, you know, abreast of the obstacles, they had to smell trash like these. So again, I thoroughly, I wholeheartedly endorse this slow approach that the commission, the Crow Report has recommended. But I'd also like to add that some of the violations out there are gross violations. They don't deserve 6 months. They don't deserve 6 days. I think we have fire hazards. We have health hazards. We have ADA violations that should be corrected, not in 6 months, but by the end of this month. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. My name is Dave White. I'm regional representative for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. It's a state trade association located in Salem. I work in the Tri-County area with garbage haulers, recyclers, and processing facilities. I'm also a member of the Portland Solid Waste Advisory Committee, which is called the Portland SWAC. I was nominated by the SWAC to represent them on the containers in the right-of-way work group. SWAC members did receive a copy of the report and discussed it at our September 25th meeting, and the committee asked me to share our comments on the proposal. SWAC is pleased with the diversity of the work group membership and the effort to develop consensus recommendations. It appears that many opinions were expressed and considered. The meetings with the numerous neighborhood associations, and they're referred to in the work group report, provided a good opportunity for citizen input. The recommendations developed by the work group are a good approach and seem reasonable to SWAC. Regarding the recommendation for containers that are already stored in the right-of-way, our committee supports the approach because it is it provides flexibility to accommodate difficult situations. Finally, our committee felt it was very important to collect data during the first year of the new policy and then report back to the work group and to the council for further recommendations or changes that might be necessary to the plan. I'm happy to answer any of your questions. Thank you.
Next three are Paige Stockwell, Berna Plummer, and Michael Mills.
Just a second, please.
Morning.
Just a second.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Go ahead and proceed. State your name, and then you have 3 minutes each.
Okay. My name is Paige Stockwell. I live at 2039 Northwest Irving Street. I support the recommendations of the Crow Report. Dumpsters and other containers on our sidewalks have been a continuing problem and a blight on our neighborhood. As an example, I would like to point out a particular problem at the intersection of Northwest 21st and Gleason, which in many respects is one of the main intersections in Northwest Portland. It is in the best interest of businesses to comply with this law, as otherwise they run the risk of their pollution chasing their customers away. At 21st and Gleason, the violators have succeeded in causing pedestrian traffic to walk in the more congested south side of Gleason Street, simply because the north side is so disgusting. I have some photos here if you want to see them. I can leave them with the clerk. The owner of the business is certainly aware of these violations, since I have met with him over a year ago and pointed out the regulations. It seems that many of the violators have used the lack of enforcement as a reason to go far beyond the dumpster issue itself and use the sidewalk to store used cooking oils, other containers, and discarded furniture and building materials. If, in fact, new construction is required to house dumpsters, the use of smaller containers is a good interim solution and also spreads the cost of compliance over a longer period with slightly more expensive collection costs. I therefore urge enforcement to include as few exceptions as possible. The sooner we get all of the dumpsters off the sidewalk, the better. Also, since enforcement of the existing code will be on a complaint basis, I would also urge that any publicity associated with these changes include a contact number or an address for reporting such a complaint. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Berna Plummer. For the last 4 years, I've been living in inner city at 5530 Northeast 7th Avenue. And just a side note, you just recently appointed Ben Kaiser, who is the one that did the design on the facility, new design on the place, to your structural commission. But with the commercial thing, when it comes to residential, he did also very good job when it came to for the garbage activity of collection. What brought me to, after listening to what has occurred, with the last 4 years since I've been in inner city, I've just been appalled concerning the health and safety that exists with all of the containers and the garbage that is allowed in inner city. I lived quite a few years in the city of Portland in East Multnomah County, and I never saw anything like I've seen continuously for all of these years. And I look at it that something is not being enforced in the city area. And, of course, I do shop in Pearl District, so I'm familiar with what they were, some of the other person said about that area. But my concern is the health and safety to our citizens that's just being ignored. And I feel that there should be city employees that are working for you that should be doing some evaluation of what has been going on. And I think these businesses know that a lot of inner city people, they complain, but they're not going to call you because a lot of them have been in the criminal system and in a lot of problems. So they don't want to have to give their names. And then I know some residential owners who have called and they feel that they're ignored because of the area that they live in. And maybe that's true and maybe it's not true. So I hope that you will make sure that all the ordinances that you have are enforced and all of the new ones that you need to adopt. I don't think it's a matter of cost to the small businesses. I think that that's something they should build into their business. I think because they are selling to the public that they have an obligation to make sure that their health and safety of anybody and in wheelchairs and what have you. And I've noticed that in inner city with a lot of people in handicap and walking in wheelchairs that are have to consider trash. And if you really went in, if some of you, if you sent some of your employees in some of the area, I mean, it's just appalling to see a lot of the trash that really brings rats and rodents and everything else that are in a lot of these mid-sized containers that are just left in our areas. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Michael Mills, your city ombudsman. It's not often I have the opportunity to come before you. It's probably been 2 years when the resolution was passed. I think the last time I was sitting in front of you. The resolution that you passed was a result of an ombudsman report where we were dealing with complaints on dumpsters on sidewalks for over 5 years now. At that point, we were faced with three options. Do nothing, which is what we had been doing and allowing the problem to continue to get worse. Drop the hammer and start enforcement or enter into a collaborative process to try to come up with the best possible way to achieve compliance with the least impact on businesses, those few businesses that were out of compliance. And council chose the one that I prefer to work collaboratively to, quote, develop solutions to the problem of garbage dumpsters and refuse containers permanently stored in the public right-of-way, including public sidewalks. A couple of points that I looked at through this entire time period is, one, there is no inherent right to use a public sidewalk for the permanent storage of refuse. And two, it has been illegal and remains illegal to permanently store refuse on sidewalks. A leading business organization in the city of Portland, as quoted in the Oregonian, said, "The Chamber of Commerce Board of Civic Improvement intends to see that the ordinances of this city relating to obstructions and debris on the streets and sidewalks are enforced." That was in 1905. Bud Clark in 1990 worked with the City Club and resulted in a recommendation number 6, provide safe and appropriate public toilet facilities in the downtown area and eliminate dumpsters from sidewalks. Some examples that led to the ombudsman report coming out, there's three I'd like to mention briefly. One is inconsistency. A business owner was fined over $1,000 by the city during his remodeling for not having his dumpster properly screened in his own parking lot. Had the individual pushed his dumpster onto the sidewalk and left it there, he would have faced no action by the city. Inequity. Another business owner located a dumpster on his parking lot, as was the correct thing to do. After adding a screening wall and a roof, he was required to construct a drain line to the city sewer and then required to install a water line to fill up the P-trap to avoid gases from backing up at considerable expense, while at the same time, several blocks away, businesses were allowed to store the dumpsters on the sidewalk with no recourse. And in cases, it's unfair. It's hard for the city and myself to justify the prohibition against people sitting on public sidewalks while at the same time allowing other people to permanently store their garbage on public sidewalks. While I believe that the solution reached is lenient with respect to financial hardship provisions that allow a waiver, I agree with the committee recommendation to adopt the report as a viable means to resolve this long-standing problem. If the city is concerned that compliance with laws against storing refuse on the public sidewalks is too great a financial burden, then the city would be justified in identifying sources to assist compliance rather than foregoing the public's use of sidewalks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Unless Peggy Anderson is here, then that is all.
Repeat the name.
Peggy Anderson.
She's representing the Knobville Business Association. She was trying to be here to support the resolution.
Okay. It's a resolution. Call the vote.
Adams.
I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman and the good staff at OSD and everyone involved with this. I'm going to support it. I'd like, though, for before you start the education, to get back to work with Kimberly Schneider and my staff to put a little more meat on the bones about when the waiver, some of the criteria for when the waiver can be enacted and when it cannot, because I think that will save us time later on as we get to the enforcement phase. And if that can be part of the educational piece of this, I think it gives business clarity up front, sort of what will be what possibly could be waived, what would not, and how to go about seeking a waiver. I also think that the comments about exactly what are the financial opportunities for folks, and if they're inadequate, I'd like OSD staff to come back to us, you know, looking at whatever, if you feel that they're going to be inadequate, I'd like you to come back. And also, again, a little more meat on the bones in terms of what would be the criteria for a business to potentially be eligible for financial assistance and then where the money might come from. But with those two sort of pieces of additional work that I think can be accomplished in the next couple of months, I'm going to vote for this. I think it's an important step forward that has been long overdue in the city of Portland. I think it will contribute to the safe passage on sidewalks. I think it will contribute to the beauty of neighborhoods in many, many ways that have been mentioned. And thank you. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, I appreciate how difficult this task is. I am administratively responsible for the enforcement of these regulations regarding dumpsters on sidewalks in an attempt to be collaborative and find a solution that worked for everybody. We have not been as technical as we could have been in enforcing these ordinances. So for 2 years, this group has worked very diligently and hard to find a middle ground and is even recommending what I consider to be a very reasonable recommendation to delay enforcement of the existing ordinances. In that context, I just have to say I am so disappointed in the Small Business Advisory Council's recommendation here today to basically table this work that's been done this way. And in a larger context, I know that the council sometimes feels like it's not listened to. I just had a conversation yesterday saying I would really love to have a better relationship with the Small Business Advisory Council, but frankly, it's these kinds of recommendations that makes it hard. I think we can't just ignore problems like this that impact people and say we should just continue turning our head to problems that affect livability and affect a number of things. But I was really glad somebody also mentioned, because I was going to, the source of fire that these represent. There are a number of structures in Portland, particularly commercial structures, including residential structures that have burned over the years, including fire deaths that started in a dumpster, either intentionally or accidentally from cigarettes that were left in a trash can. And this isn't just a livability issue, it's a public safety issue as well. And in that context, I've tried to be very restrained in the enforcement of the provisions of the code in recognition of the impact on small businesses. But to move from here to the next place is going to require cooperation from everybody. And frankly, I expect it. It's not something we can delay any longer, and I've, in spite of my sometimes quick reputation, have been very patient to try to get these recommendations in place before we implement them, but I have grown impatient and am happy that we're going to accept this report, follow the work group's recommendation, and try to do it in a way that is as least impactful as possible on people, but on the other hand recognizes the huge public safety and livability aspects of finally implementing these recommendations. So again, thank you very much. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank the Ombudsman, Michael Mills, for bringing this to our attention again since the 1905 chamber and Mayor Clark's City Club speech. It's always good to keep it in front of us. And I think this time I want to thank the committee also for, I think, coming up with a very pragmatic solutions, but also recognizing that this is, you know, the public right-of-way is exactly that. It is the public right-of-way, and people ought not to have to worry about getting around dumpsters or smelling dumpsters and being targets of graffiti, and it's time to really find solutions. I think the ability to provide a hardship waiver is there, and it is something that is designed to be, you know, truly hardship situations. It's not designed to be a loophole under which everybody who's currently in the right-of-way says, you know, it's a hardship. This is to truly be a case where there are no practical solutions. But I will say that, you know, in the year 2007, there's no insurmountable technical obstacles to getting these containers out of our right-of-ways. And we will certainly work with incentives and technical assistance and maybe opportunities for storefront grants or other financial assistance. But there's going to be very few situations, in my mind, where it will really be just impossible to get them off the right-of-way. And that's what the hardship waiver should truly be confined to. So thanks again, everybody. Aye.
Stan.
Well, I appreciate, Commissioner Saltzman, your work on this and Bruce and the team at OSD. You know, basically, containers don't belong in the right-of-way, and they need to get out of there. And I think it's pretty simple. This is, to me, is an eminently fair approach. My friend Dan Anderson was very kind, I thought, in saying, you know, we have to enforce the law. I was actually going to say, gosh, you guys took you 2 years, but with the revelation that it's 102 years into the problem, I think 2 years appears and it's all an eye of the beholder, appears to be pretty quick work. And I really think, you know, it's one of these things where we've got some ways to take some steps if it's truly necessary. But I generally think on these kind of issues, when the city is clear, makes the rules fair so that they apply to everybody, that our free market is incredibly resourceful and finds ways to respond. I did think Ken Turner had a reasonable point on if this should be modified as we potentially go into franchising, which, you know, is the way I lean on commercial hauling. I don't think that calls Ken for not doing this, but I think it calls for being open. If the new commercial strategies offer some other opportunities, we ought to come back and modify this. I think otherwise there's always a reason not to move forward. So I wouldn't say don't move forward, but I think we ought to keep that in mind. So great work, everybody, and glad to vote aye.
Potter.
I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman, the Crow Work Group, and all the bureaus that participated in that. And Michael Mills, thank you for bringing this forward once again. So I think this really solves what I consider to be a fairly serious health and safety issue in our city, one that affects the mobility limited community, but also just average citizens trying to get around town. I think anybody that's been around for a while can remember pictures of other cities, such as in New York, when they had garbage strikes, how it piles up on the street. That's something that citizens notice, and I think if we want a really truly livable city, we've got to make sure that it's not only livable for it's livable for everybody, but it's also we keep our garbage off the street and off the public right-of-way. So I'm really pleased with this. I think it's incremental, but it will get to solve what I consider to be a serious problem. So thank you all for working on it.
Aye.